Hi, everyone. This is the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm your host, Christina. Thank you so much for listening in. Today's episode is going to be brought to you by our sponsors, the Better Institute, where people go to get better. You can find them at betterinstitute.com. And our new sponsor, Birch's Health, an online gambling addiction therapy. You can do it all online. You can find them at birchshealth.com. Therapy is an amazing tool to add to your toolbox in recovery. It's a great way to stop that bleeding and start that healing. So please check them out. All right. So before we get started in this week's episode, I wanted to share with you some resources that would be available over the next few weeks. I know the holidays, however you celebrate, whether it's Hanukkah, Christmas, solstice, or don't celebrate. There can be a lot of stress and emotional overwhelm and grief and all those emotions that we are trying to navigate, especially in recovery, in early recovery. So I wanted to make sure you knew about some resources that are available. So the first one is recoveryroadonline.com. They have a marathon meeting, I believe, from December 24th through early 26th. Don't quote me on that. I should have wrote it down before I started recording. But that is a very helpful place to go. They have rooms 24/7, meetings. You can go in there and just be with people who understand, you know, what you're going through, especially this time of year. And then also gamblersinrecovery.com. They have meetings 24/7 all over the world. So you can go in there and also get that, get just extra support if you're feeling off or lonely or, you know, dealing with just the emotions of the holidays. So those are great resources. The online groups like Facebook and Reddit are great places to go as well if you need to post and get things off your chest. So I just wanted to share those resources and wish everybody the happiest of holidays and to say how much I appreciate you supporting this podcast and listening over the last 2.5 years. And I can't wait to see what goes on in the new year. So all right, let's get into this episode with Maureen. She's a friend and she's a huge part of the BGS, and it was just great to bring her on and share her recovery journey and hope with us. She really is an amazing friend and mentor in the BGS. So let's roll into this episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast. And today we are chatting with our friend Maureen. Hi, Maureen.
Hey, Christina. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here on the BGS podcast with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have this conversation. You are a huge part of the BGS, and I appreciate all you do, and to have this conversation so that you can share your journey and your hope with those listening, I just can't thank you enough. All right. Well, let's get into your story. When did gambling start for you? You know, you can go back to where you kind of were introduced to it and then kind of maybe where it started, you started to recognize the issues with it.
Yeah. I mean, gambling, was always kind of present in my life, you know, going back to family parties being a kid. I remember, and specifically holidays, all the men especially would be playing cards. All the tables would be set up. All the men would be playing cards. The coins would be all over. I remember us as kids, like being 4, 5, 6 years old, you know, after the card games were over, we'd go into the room and see if we could find any coins left on the ground that maybe somebody forgot about. My mom was a big bingo player, and, you know, she played bingo probably 5 nights a week. And I remember one time going with her to the bingo hall, and I don't know, I had to be 5 or 6 years old, maybe. Yeah. Around that time. So that would have been in the '80s. And I guess they allowed kids in the bingo hall at that time, because I remember going with her and being so excited to be a part of it, you know, to go to this place that she went to all the time. Like, what was the mystery around it? What was it all about? And I can remember the 8-foot banquet tables and all the people at the table having their cards all taped down and all of their good luck charms and all the things. chips, bingo dabbers. And I remember that they gave me a blank napkin. It was just a napkin and a bingo dabber, so I could pretend that I was, playing along, as they were calling out the numbers. So that goes back to, early childhood for me. But I remember being very excited to be a part of it, like a part of this world that, where did my mom go when she would leave? Where is it she went to with her and her friends and all the things. So pretty young, that's pretty young. And when I think about that now, I don't think that they would allow children in bingo halls, but they did back then. Somehow I was there.
The 80s were a different time, I think, all the way around. The 70s, 80s, no seat belts, you smoked in the airplanes. Like, it's definitely a different time.
And my parents did go to Vegas a couple of times. I remember them going on vacations, long weekends to Vegas a few times. And then like the riverboat casinos opened up here, probably in the, and I'm in Chicago, outside of Chicago. So that had to be in the 90s. And I remember when I turned 21. They took me to the boat. That was, that's what we did. They took me to the boat. They gave me some money and, said, go ahead, go play some slots, see how you do. So there was a little bit of that. And I don't remember. At that time, my gambling would be what I consider, I guess, controlled, if I could even use that word, because, those casinos were 45, 50-minute drive from where I lived, and there was no way I was gonna do that every day. So, it didn't take hold or anything. It just seemed like an innocent thing. But I do remember one time telling, I think it was my mom, like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that this is so far away, because like all these lights, everything, like I remember saying it, I could totally see myself like struggling with this because it's so exciting and just you lose track of time and all the things, then I remember after my husband and I got married and I was actually pregnant with our first daughter, we went to the casino with my parents again. We had just closed on our house. And, after the closing, we went to the casino. And I remember hitting a jackpot on the slots, and I remember telling my husband, like, the payout came and I'm like, I'm not spending any of this. We're putting this in the bank. Like it was, I was controlled at that time. So then now we're, so let's flash forward a few years. So at this time now, within 5 years, I got married. I had two kids, bought a house, and both of my parents died a year and a half apart of each other. So that was all in 5 years. And I was just like barely hanging on. I was working full time. He was working full time. Our kids were now starting to get into school at this point, preschool, kindergarten. It was a crazy life. Trying to juggle everything, trying to juggle marriage, juggle parenthood, juggle being an employee. And I was like starting to climb the ladder and trying to decide, like, am I going to be able to keep this career and keep my family going? And how am I going to do this? And, definitely my marriage, our relationship suffered a little bit during that time because, my attention was on so many other things. And so, as you can imagine, some things happened in our marriage. A wedge came between us, all that stuff. So I was dealing with that kind of pain. And when I say dealing with it, I mean like pushing it down and trying to find as many other things as I possibly could to do, because the more balls I had in the air, the less I had to look at myself. And that's pretty much what started to happen. I just started to get involved in anything I possibly could, volunteering, running myself ragged, whatever I could do to not pay attention to my own feelings and my own self. So once the kids got to be more self-sufficient and got a little bit older, time started to present itself a little bit. And I remember a friend of mine that I worked with, my coworker. Now at this time, they started opening these little gaming cafes all around here. There's gaming cafes, and then like your local lunch places or restaurants, coffee shops, whatever you can think of, started getting these video game machines. And my coworker and I would go to lunch a couple times a week at this little pizza place down the corner. And I remember the first few months that those machines were in there, she loved to gamble. So she would, we'd eat our lunch and she'd go play the machines, and I would just sit at the table and I would be on my phone or whatever, because it just wasn't my thing, and then one day I decided to join her, and I think I put in, a small amount. Sorry, I don't want to talk about amounts. A small amount of money, and I ended up winning, a lot more than that small amount. And I was like, oh, so then it started to become every time we went there for lunch, I would put in a small amount. And, as time went on, the amount that I was winning started to increase, which I didn't realize that those machines would pay that kind of money out. And that was it. I was, once I won that big jackpot, there was no turning back after that. So at this time too, my husband was dealing with his own struggle of addiction, and we were going to a program called Celebrate Recovery, where you could go as a couple, and the first hour was kind of like, it was kind of like a step study, I guess you could say. The leader would stand, be at the front of the room and take you through the step and the readings and all that for the first hour. And then the second hour, we would break up into, men and women, and you could do like a therapy and Celebrate Recovery, for anybody that doesn't know, it's for anything. You could be, alcohol, drugs, gambling, emotional, eating disorders, whatever. It covers all the bases. So, when I started doing Celebrate Recovery, I guess it was kind of making me realize, like, okay, I think I have a problem, like this, something's not right here. But it was just progressing as as we were part of this group. And I remember, talking to the ladies about it, and nobody else there was a gambler, so they really didn't understand, they didn't know. They just, for whatever reason, they just didn't get it. They're like, I get alcohol and I get drugs because it will, affect, they would, and this is their words, like it would affect your mind, but they didn't think gambling did. They're like, what are you getting out of it? Like, just put your money in the trash. They just, and I remember the gentleman telling me, because I remember going to him and being like, I can't stop. I remember I came clean to him, and I was just like, literally last night I spent like all of my paycheck and I can't stop. And I'm here coming to these meetings and I don't know what to do. So he suggested that I try a GA meeting, because he's like, I don't know how to help you with this, So maybe you should try to find a local GA meeting and see, what you can find out. So I found one nearby. It was about 10 minutes from home, and so I started to go to the meeting, and I did get 287 days clean abstinence, in that meeting. And I always say that I was like such a good student. I had all the books. I was writing things down. I would be highlighting things, and just come home, and it was like all the self-help became shelf help. It would just be sitting on the shelf until the next meeting, and I wasn't doing anything, but I stopped. I wasn't gambling, I wasn't gambling. So at about the, once I hit 287 days, and I remember because I know the exact amount of days because I was writing it down. I have it in a notebook. Day 287. That was the last time I wrote down a day. I went to the meeting and I just was like, I don't need to do this anymore. And I don't really feel like it was in that moment, like, an ego move, because my awareness at that time was not where it is now. I was just like, I got this. I don't need to do this anymore. 287 days, I've got this licked, and I think I was good for probably about a month. And then I started again. And it was just, it picked up right where it left off, and it got worse. I mean, I just got to the point where I was spending every time I got paid, it was like autopilot. Money goes into the bank, Maureen takes out the money, Maureen goes to those places and puts the money in the machines. It was like there was no value to the money. It was like monopoly money, whatever you want to call it. But looking back on it now, I know like my life was so unmanageable and out of control. And those machines controlled me, and I liked it. I liked that I was being controlled. And in my mind, it was, I could just, the control for me was I could let go of everything. And like I did, had no noise. There was no noise in my head. When I would not be behind that machine or in front of that machine, however you want to say it, there was constant noise, life noise, noise about the past, noise about what I have to do with the future. All the things, beating myself up, what I did wrong, what I did, what I could do better, why didn't I do this? I should have did this for this person. I mean, it was just constant noise. But when I got to that machine, I've said it multiple times that it was like my easy button. It reminded me of that Staples commercial, like this is easy. Press the button. It was like complete, just I was somewhere else. I didn't have to be in my head anymore. So this went on for I think when I left the GA room after 287 days, I was too embarrassed to go back. It took me probably, I want to say it was a 3-year period before I went back into another meeting. But in that time, we did have the pandemic. Okay. And when the pandemic happened here in Chicago, all those machines were shut down. Even if the places were open, because again, like I said, they were in stores, restaurants, all those, even if those stores were open, the machines were shut down. So during that time, I probably had about 18 months of not gambling, but I don't really count that as any kind of abstinence or recovery because it wasn't by choice, and I also knew at that time being stuck at home and all of us working from home, my daughters were still living with us at the time. I was aware enough to know I need to enjoy this time with them because they're going to be leaving us soon. So I learned a lot in that time with the pandemic. And I know a lot of people, it's so strange because so many people that I talk to now, I'm not a phone gambler or I never did anything like that, but I guess that was still available. Like, because people said their gambling got really bad during the pandemic. And
Oh yeah, online was so accessible, right? Like you could do it from your home and you wouldn't have to worry about being around people. Yeah, it definitely took off for those places to have it available.
So I mean, I had no idea that that was happening, thank goodness for myself. But
Same.
but as soon as those machines opened up again, right back I went.
Did you hesitate at all? Because I hesitated for 2 weeks after they opened back up here.
There was no hesitation at all, but I will say for the first time in probably ever of my gambling or going back to gambling, however, I was starting to think about things. Like, even if it was just for a brief second, like, it was like, oh, you don't have to do this, or why am I doing this? Or, so there were little voices that I was hearing, that inner voice that I so blatantly ignored. You know, I so blatantly ignored it. So, we'll go to the day that I came back in. So it was March 4th of 2022, and I was coming home from work, and I knew that I was coming home to an empty house. Nobody was going to be home. And I got to the parish, the local, my local parish that had bingo. They would have, now bingo was not, again, it was not my thing. I never really went to bingo or thought that bingo would ever be a problem for me, right? So I'm like, I think I'm just gonna go to bingo. You know, there's nothing to do, nobody's around. I'm just gonna go to bingo. So I went to bingo by myself, which was, I've never done that. Went to bingo by myself and ended up winning like the last game of the night, which was like, you know, the bigger game, I guess, and split it. I did split it. I won with somebody else. So I left there, and instead of like turning left to go home, I turned right to go to the nearest establishment that had those machines. Now, mind you, this was probably the least amount of money I have ever brought into one of those places, because I would always go on payday when I had a big chunk of change in the bank. This was to me chump change, you know, but I was like, I'm not going home. For whatever reason that night, I was not getting that escape. I was definitely an escape gambler, and sitting in front of that machine that night, I was not getting that. I was very aware of the money just dwindling down, and very aware of a fight within myself, because I kept saying, just cash out. This is not going well. Just cash out and leave. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it until the money was, I did not leave there until the money was gone, which, you know, by the way, happened very often. But for whatever reason, I was aware of it. I was like, I remember coming to terms with it and being at peace with it, sitting in the chair and being like, I'm not going to leave here until this is gone, you know? And when it finally ran out, I walked out. I was walking from the place to my car, and it was, I wasn't angry, I wasn't frustrated, I wasn't like, my emotions weren't all over. I was calm. I was calm. And I got into my car and sat in the driver's seat, and for the first time in a long time, my eyes caught my own gaze in the rearview mirror. And I believe today, with all of my heart, that that was my higher power, which is God for me, giving me that moment to see myself through his eyes. And I just held my gaze and was like, this has got to stop. And you know what you need to do. I got into the car, I drove home. My husband was here, and I told him, I'm like, I'm going upstairs. I'm locking myself in our room, and I'm finding a meeting, you know? So I called the 800 number, and I honestly don't know if they, I ended up on a meeting, an RRO meeting, which is Recovery Road Online. And I don't know if they gave me the Gamblers in Recovery website, and I found it. I'm not quite sure how I ended up there. You know, I know I made the call. I know I spoke with someone, and they sent me to a website, and I want to say it was the Gamblers in Recovery. And I just clicked on the meeting that was going on right at that time. And I ended up on Recovery Road Online. And at that time, they were having meetings back to back. I mean, it was, so that weekend, I did not disconnect. I was on my phone the entire weekend. I fell asleep to the meetings. I woke up to the meetings, and I just listened and tried to process everything that had happened and was happening to me in those moments. Now, I had found your podcast, Christina. I came in March 4th, so I probably found your podcast mid-February. And I remember falling asleep to your podcast every night. And that was, to me, I feel like that was the beginning of my trying to seek recovery this second time around, because I heard the stories, I heard your story, and I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is like somebody understands, and I'm not crazy. Like, this is not this is a real thing, because our loved ones, God bless my husband and my kids, but they didn't understand it and were just like, why can't you just stop?
Yeah.
It was like, what a concept.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that before.
Right. Well, dang it. Man, I should have tried that months ago or years ago. Like, shoot.
Yeah. And it was like, and I remember being like, you guys have to listen to this podcast. You need to listen to this podcast so you could understand, and they were, they weren't open to it at the time. They of course were open to me doing whatever I needed to do to seek recovery, but they had no idea. And I had no idea where this journey was going to take me, So, I made a decision when I was, because I had been in GA before, I had heard the 90 meetings in 90 days. And for anybody that doesn't know what that is, when you go to GA, they really encourage that you try to make 90 meetings in 90 days. Now, when I first started going to GA, there were no Zoom meetings. It was all in-person meetings. And I'm a working mother of two. There was no way. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to make nine. I mean, before I even got in, I was already telling myself, there's no way. Like, how am I going to go to a meeting every single day when I'm working full time and I'm a full time mom and a full time wife and all the things? But when I came in the second time and I found Zoom, I'm like, well, this is possible because I can jump on a meeting in the morning before I go to work. I can jump on a meeting at lunchtime, even if it's just a half hour. I can pretty much any time I want, and I go on to either RRO or Gamblers in Recovery, there's a meeting somewhere. You just have to be resourceful and find it, So I made a decision that I was going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. That was my first goal for myself. And I think I did 90 meetings in like under maybe 40 days, under 40 days. It might even been like 36, because I was doing two or three a day and just getting so much out of them. Another thing I'll share with everyone is there's a book called The High Five Habit by Mel Robbins. I'm just trying to give you guys everything that I did in my early recovery, and her book was probably the first book that I read that I would say helped, with my recovery. And the basis of that book is that every morning when you are getting yourself ready, or when you walk past a mirror or whatever it is, to high five yourself and just be like, I got you, I love you, you can do this. And I know it sounds corny, and she just says, try it, just try it for 5 to 7 days to start out, right? But there's something to it. There's something to it. I think it's the looking at yourself in the mirror every day. And when you think about your kids or your husband or your parents or whoever that is, when you love someone, you look them in the eye and you listen to them and you give them encouragement or support or whatever that is. So to me, the high five habit was the beginning of my self-care and my self-love in my recovery journey. And it really did do something for my recovery for sure.
And she has an amazing podcast,
Oh,
by the
so good.
way.
Yes.
It is really, really good. And I think it's in, I mean, it's like in the top
Yes.
podcast of all podcasts. So, she is talks a lot about the epitome of change and that we're capable of change. And, it's like every episode is just really inspiring and encouraging as well. So I just thought I would just put that in there for those listening.
Yeah, it's a great podcast. We just have so many resources not here now, between recovery podcasts, self-care and self-help podcasts, Zoom meetings. It's impossible, I think, to not be connected, to other people that are in recovery. Because, I mean, look at you and I, Christina. You're in Oklahoma, I'm in Chicago. And I'm going to get to that part of my story when I met you for the first time and I felt like I was meeting a celebrity.
I get that so much, and I think it's just because they hear my voice, and you hear my voice, and
And then when you see it, you're like, she's real. Like, she's not a unicorn. She's real. So, still going to meetings at this time, still going to meetings every day and listening to everything that people were saying, which, of course, they were talking about the steps, right? And I was petrified. I mean, when I went into GA before, it wasn't even a thought. Like, I never even thought that I was going to work the steps. And that's what I think. I mean, I guess for me, the 90 meetings in 90 days made me realize people are coming into those meetings and you're hearing all their testimonies and their stories. And you start to realize, like, the people that work the steps, their life changed. Their life changed. And so I started to think about, I think I'm going to start working the steps. I need to find a sponsor. So my second goal and promise to myself that was that when I hit 90 days, I was going to find a sponsor. So I think right around the 90-day mark, Christina, I was on a smart recovery meeting with your friend Kitty. I think Kitty was the host of the smart recovery meeting on RRO, and you were in the room. And you weren't on video. It was just your screen, and it's exactly what it says right now, Christina, the Broke Girl Society. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, is that her? I'm thinking to myself, is that her? Oh my gosh. And I'm like, I'm just gonna send her a quick message, in the chat. So I sent you a chat message and just said exactly like, hey, I don't know if you're the same Broke Girl Society that has the podcast, but if you are, I've been listening and thank you so much. And I started this journey and, I think I told you how many days I had, and then you replied back and I was just ecstatic. And you told me about the Facebook page and how you guys had a weekly meeting and join the page and join the meeting. And I did. And, everything changed. Everything changed for me. I found my sponsor. I started a relationship conversation. That's how we started, having our weekly meetings, just let's get to know each other, kind of see what this is all about. And yeah, started working the steps, and here I am 21 months in, and I can't believe it. And it's all because of this wonderful journey of recovery. And I don't know if anyone's figured it out, but I had asked Christina to be my sponsor and my mentor. And so here we are. And now I get to share my story on your beautiful podcast and just a beautiful healing tool for so many of us that are walking this road. And I think I said to you before that you were like my lighthouse, like, you were my lighthouse. You lit up that road for me so that I could start the journey and get myself going. And you've done that for so many, and so many have done that for so many. When you get into the Facebook page and the groups, I mean, just nothing but support with all these women. And it's just, we're lucky. We are lucky to live in this day and age where Zoom is a thing and podcasts are a thing. Because I think about my poor mom, which was another part of the story. We had lost a brother when I was born. I was actually a year old when he died. And to be born into that, pain, and to not have been aware of that until I was 50 years old. I turned 50 this year. And that's when all these things started coming to light. Like, I remember the thought of inner child work, because I had done therapy, and I never understood the inner child. I never understood it until I started working the steps. I started getting into meditations, and I actually experienced a one-on-one between me and my inner child. And the things that I learned from that 5-year-old girl. explained so much about how my life ended up the way it ended up. And I mean, I can say today, you know, this has been pain. It's painful. And to me, addiction is about pain. I that is just bottom line. That's what it, and pain. And what is pain? Trauma is pain. So we talked about big T, we could talk about big T trauma, little T trauma. That was a misconception that I had my entire life. I did not think that I experienced any kind of trauma because I didn't witness a crime or a murder or you know, whatever you want to think of being a big trauma, I guess. But I was a daughter of addicted parents that never found recovery. I lost a brother. I was part of a family that went through grief and never got help. No, none of them, none of my siblings. I mean, how could they? My parents, they did the best they could, you know, and that's why I say we live in the greatest time, because I always wonder now about my mom. Had this kind of help been available to her at her fingertips, if things would have been different for her, you know? But I'm grateful today for my addiction, because I feel like if I didn't have it, I would have never found the steps. And we go through life saying there's no book or no guidebook on how to live our life. And the steps is that for me. You know, I work those steps every single day. You know, I try and take an inventory of myself every single day. What did I do well? What did I not do well? Did I do someone wrong? Do I owe someone an apology? You know, just the meaning of like the next best decision, you know, and doing the right thing. Like, what does doing the right thing mean to me today? Because doing the right thing meant to me all these years to do for everybody else, to make sure everybody else, and don't get me wrong, there, you still, you know, when you make decisions, you don't want to hurt anybody, right? But my decisions were always made on everything on the outside. Like, what is this person? What are they going to think of me? How much more can I do for them so that they know my worth and they know how much they mean to me? Even if it meant depleting myself, and embarrassed to say, even if it meant taking myself away from my own kids and my husband, I did it just so that I could give to somebody else, and missed opportunities in my own family. I mean, sure, I was trying to be an example and try to show my kids that, you know, we're in this life to help other people, but when you're not putting on your own oxygen mask, you're not doing anybody any
Right.
favors. And I was in such a, oh, just such a mess of things. You know, my everything on the outside looked like I had it all together. But the inside, it was like it was just a house of cards that every night, you know, would just fall to the ground. And I'd be trying to pick up the pieces and putting it all back together with no foundation so that it would just do that again the next day. And I did this day after day and year after year.
I think a lot of women can relate to that feeling of like trying to just hold it all together, kind of look like we have it all together. But you know, we're depleting ourselves and kind of dying a little bit inside. And you know, like because we're not taking care of ourselves and we're not doing those things. And I think that's what the beautiful thing is with recovery. And I think that's why some of us can say, hey, I'm grateful that I struggled with addiction, because now I know how to actually navigate those tough emotions. I know how important it is to sit in my feelings and to try and work through what's going on. I know how important it is to validate what I'm going through. Because you know, when you were talking about trauma, it's like a lot of times we don't associate ourselves with trauma because we think, oh, somebody else has it worse. You know, we're constantly trying to like devalue our own experiences for the sake of others. And it's like, no, this was some some shit that I went through, and I need to recognize that and understand that. So, yeah, and I think it teaches us how to better take care of ourselves so that we can better take care of those that we love. How has now that you're in recovery 21 months, and I'm so freaking proud of you. Like, I've just seen you grow, and I've been like on the other side of the conversation when you've had these really healing moments, and you know, it's been really inspiring. And now you give back so much to the gambling recovery community through, you know, through the BGS, through RRO, through just the other things that you do for your own personal recovery. So for somebody, and I know a lot of people are going to relate so much to your story. For somebody coming in, what would you just say to them about just exploring recovery? You gave a lot of tips on like how you navigated it, but what would you say to somebody just coming in trying to understand it?
Listen to yourself when you're saying this isn't good for me. This isn't good for me. And don't go back to what's not good for you. And it what blows my mind is we when we're in the bouts of the addiction, right? We're so afraid that we're going to give up our independence and our creativity and just all these things like I'm going to give up. I'm not giving up my control of the money, and I'm not giving. And when we're in the addiction, we don't have any of that. It's already lost. It's already lost. Like that addiction took everything from me, everything material and everything that you see on the outside and everything and more on the inside. It took everything. That holding on of that control of this is my money. I'm not turning over my finances. I'm not, the denial, the justification, and the validation that we give ourselves while we're in that addiction is just nothing but lies to ourselves. I mean, I did not consider myself an addict because I didn't lie about it. My husband and kids knew I was gambling. To me, an addict was somebody that did it in the shadows and didn't want anybody to know about it and kept it a secret. It wasn't a secret. I mean, I didn't go out blabbering it to my entire family and friends that it was something I mean, they knew it was something I enjoyed doing, but they didn't know to the level that I was doing it. But that was my justification. The truth was my justification and manipulation to continue. And the more I said, I deserve this, I don't take vacations, I don't buy fancy clothes, I don't do this, I don't, anything I could say to validate the gambling was coming out. But when I finally was able to find that quiet and hear that inner voice and listened to it, I called that now the beginning of my self-awareness, which is the biggest tool in my
Absolutely.
toolbox. Because as long as I'm aware,
Yeah.
I can change and I can do something. As long as I'm aware of what my behavior or what I did that day, if I'm aware of it, I can address it, I can celebrate it, or I can change it. So listening to your own inner voice when it's telling you this is not right, this isn't good for you. This isn't going to feel good. You know how this is going to end. You know how this is going to end. You're not lying to yourself in that moment. You're lying to yourself when you're like, oh, I don't need to listen to that. So it would be listening to those inner thoughts and inner voice and trying to turn to self-awareness.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's one of my biggest tools as well, is like when you're self-aware, then at least you can make a better choice, right? Like when we're self-aware of what's going on with us, when we're self-aware of, you know, our emotional state, then we can make choices based on that. And it feels good to have that control back. Because before, when you're not self-aware, you don't, you're right, you don't have that control. You're just kind of lost to it.
No, just on autopilot. It's like, what are those things in the background of a video game called? The players, the people in the back of the video games, like actual video games. There's a word for them. Like when we're in our addiction and not self-aware, we're on autopilot. And if you imagine, if you've ever played a video game when you were a kid and there was like a person that was in the background that wasn't an actual player, and it's just like literally like up against a wall, but it's moving, but it's not getting anywhere. That is what the addiction does to us. We are not a player in our game of life.
Did you ever have moments where you didn't even remember driving to the casino? Or did you ever have moments where you're like, how, like you almost like you wake up from a trance and like, how did I even get here? I remember starting to have those towards the end of my gambling. I started having these kind of episodes where I honestly didn't remember driving to the casino. Not that it was a blackout thing, but it was just like, I don't know. It was just kind of this surreal, like, why am I here? I don't want to be here, but I got in the car and I drove myself here and, you know.
I was going to say the drive home was always like, I always remember the drive home because, it's despair. It's, whatever you were feeling in those moments. But it was the getting there that I never remembered. It was
Isn't
like,
that crazy?
literally, it was just, there was not even a thought. There was not even a thought into it. It was like a bell would ring. As soon as the money would go in the account, it was like a ding. And it literally was a ding because I would get a text notification from my bank that the money was in the account. And it was like, okay, I knew that morning when I was getting ready for work that at lunch I was gonna, because it was always on my lunch break for me most of the time, But yeah, when I think about it now. But you know what I experienced a lot after after my hours of gambling was when I would try to sleep at night, I would see the reels. I would be laying in my bed with my eyes closed, but it was like I was sitting behind that machine. I could see them. I could see the spinning and the stopping and the, I mean, it, yeah, it was like I was still seeing that in my brain when it wasn't in front of me.
Yeah, I remember experiencing that myself. And then of course I usually like still smelled like the casino and yeah, I would lay there and it would just be kind of like I was it's just kind of that feeling when you go to the lake and you've been at the lake all day and then you come home and all of a sudden you're just rock like kind of feeling like you're rocking in the waves. It was very similar with the machines. I had that very same and it would be for hours and I would be wired and I couldn't sleep and but yeah, very much a similar experience.
There was another thing I wanted to share real quick about. This was also something that I read in my recovery, early recovery, like multiple times each day. I don't know if you remember Christina, but I was like such a big acronym person. Like they just helped me so much, like remember things. And I remember finding this acronym for denial, and it just reminded me so vividly about what addiction does to us and when we're in denial. The D disables our feelings. I mean, that's exactly what that was my rock bottom, by the way. I know I didn't talk about that. My rock bottom was when everything felt the same. I did not know the difference between joy and pain. I did not know the difference between happiness and sadness. Everything felt exactly the same. I was completely numb. So it disables our feelings. E is energy lost. I remember going to the doctor because I was so exhausted and not telling her, of course, that I was gambling, but just telling her that I had no energy and I don't know why I'm feeling so bad. And she ran some blood work and I was low on vitamin D and vitamin B. And she's like, I'm going to give you a prescription for this, high potency vitamin D that you'll be on for a few months. And we'll give you this B12 shot. We'll start it once a week in the beginning. She's like, you're going to feel like $1 million after a month because you are so low on all this. It did nothing. It did nothing. I had no idea that sitting behind the machine gambling was just sucking away all the energy that I had every day. And it wasn't until I was probably about the 60-day mark in clean that the energy started to come back. And I remember having the light bulb moment and making the connection and being like, oh, the energy lost was because of the gambling. Negates our growth. I was definitely not having any kind of growth during that time. Isolates us, from our higher power or God. You know, I've always said God's always been in my life, and I always think of it now as like a light that's not plugged in, or like if your phone's not charged. If we're not plugged in and checking in and making space and working that spiritual muscle every day, we're not going to feel that connection. And the more I am connected to God every day, the more I feel like I'm learning about myself, and that self-awareness just keeps growing, because that inner voice is our higher power, and it's always been there. Everything that we need, everything that I need, is already within me. I just have to get still and quiet enough and listen. My prayer and meditation life, my prayer life used to be, of course, I would pray for other people, like things that they were going through, and thank God for things. But my prayer life is so much, I would never take the time to just stop and listen. Like, I was always just, okay, God, this is my list of things. Here, you know. But now, learning how to meditate and quiet my mind and take that stillness, even if it's just 2 minutes a day, if I only have time for that, I always hear something, and something of value. A alienates us from relationships. I mean, that's all of us. I mean, we can all, yeah. And L lengthens the pain. I remember doing a journal, when I decided to do a drawing instead of a writing my journal. And it was a prompt that I found, and it was about like, draw like what your addiction looked like, and draw like what your recovery looks like, or something along those lines. And on the paper, it was split into two halves, and my addiction was like, you know, up, down, straight, back around, you know, come this way. It was like every avoidance at every possible way. I was avoiding everything. Where recovery, it's like a straight line across the paper. The next right thing, the next best step, get through. And it was just such an obvious black and white like representation of my addiction and recovery. It was mind-blowing.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that when we were going through the steps, and it's I'm a visual person, so anytime I see something like visually like that, it's like, you know, like, all right. Well, I will go ahead and kind of wind this down, and I just want to say again how much I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. I know it's so hard to share like years of our gambling harm and trying to do it in a, you know, roughly a 45-minute episode. But it's, you know, it's just inspiring to hear your growth and well, to be part of it, you know, through this journey and to see it and to experience it with you. I just want to again just tell you how much I appreciate you.
I appreciate and love you so much, Christina. And, you know, this is a bond that we're always going to have. I mean, you're the person who walked me through these steps for the very first time,
Yeah.
and guided me through. And I feel like I can never thank you enough. And I just appreciate the opportunities that you offer me to give back to the BGS, you know, with helping out with meetings and just being able to help allow people into the face group page. And, you know, it's important. It's important. I mean, I find myself when I'm doing that and reading the answers to those questions, you know, to get in and revisiting those, like, I remember doing that. And I remember like being excited and nervous and not knowing like what this was going to be, where this was going to take me. You know what I mean? And I just always have just such good vibes when people are coming in. Like, It's almost like I get excited, like, okay, I'm letting you in, you know.
Welcome to recovery. Yes. And so it feels like it's, you're hopeful for them that they're going to come in and they're going to experience what we're experiencing, right? It's always interesting too, because there's so many personalities and we're all so unique. Our journeys, even though we are so interconnected in our behaviors and how addiction has overtaken us, we're still so unique in our backgrounds, cultures and beliefs and things like that. And so to be able to have a community that's just full of support and encouragement, it's not always going to be 100% perfect, but it really does a damn good job, if I say so myself. And I'm just proud of the way everybody shows up. And we all want to see each other succeed on this road. And I'm just so proud of the ripple effect of like just sharing our stories and being part of the journey of others and how that goes on to impact, other communities. And so yeah, I'm again truly grateful.
Yeah, and just real quick, on that, how important it is, the newcomer, the person coming in for the first time. I remember coming in and being like, I have nothing to offer. I have not, like, I'm just gonna try to like sit here and hide in the corner and just, but oh my gosh, the opportunity that the new person gives us to be able to welcome them in and kind of it, they allow us to like put our recovery into action. And it's so important. That's what I love about all the groups is yes, there are all different, everyone's at different phases. There's relapsers, people coming in for the first time. I've been in meetings with a woman who's been in for 48 years, 48 years of recovery. I was honored this last convention, she here in Chicago, she came and I was able to witness her being the last woman standing in that room with the most, the most years of recovery by a woman. And I was able to witness that and stand by her side. And when she came down the line, put my hand up and give her that high five and to thank her because I listened to every word that she says. It's just such a beautiful thing. And recovery is, I mean, I can't say it enough. I'm just so grateful for it all. So yeah, we'll just leave it at that. Otherwise, I'll keep going.
I know, like in all these conversations, it's like we could just talk for hours about this, but I know the listeners probably like, okay, well, I gotta get on with my life here. So, all right. Well, let's end it here.
All right, thanks. See everybody on the BGS.